Campus FM presents My Pizza and Toffee Apples in the 1950s. Produced and presented by Patricia Salomone.
In the long, quiet evenings before the advent of television, my father listened to the BBC News and my mother played Chopin on our piano. Her music drifted out through the open windows into the dark summer nights, lit up only here and there by the dim lights in the British military barracks opposite our home. Last week, I told you about our crossing between Messina and Reggio Calabria, about the intoxicating fresh sea breeze, the appetizing smell of tasty arancini stuffed with mozzarella cheese. I spoke about receding Etna and the approaching coast of southern Italy. I must say that much though we liked the boat trip on that idyllic tract of sea between Sicily and Il Continente, we were happy when it was over and we could continue our journey towards our destination, Mother's birthplace, Taranto, in Apulia. Resuming its movement, slowly lulling, thudding gently, the Ferrovia dello Stato train, the Reggio Calabria-Roma, would begin its coal-fueled climb up the western coast of Calabria. Up, along the toe of Italy, along the fantastic Tyrrhenian coast, where the foot of the Apennines kisses the sea. We had snow-capped mountains to our right, and pristine beaches and the blue sea to our left. Inside the train compartment, the seats were upholstered in fancy flowered velvet, and on the racks above our heads, we placed our suitcases. Sailors stood smoking out in the corridors by the open windows. And again, that smell of cigarettes, starch and grown-up men fired my childhood imagination. The train whistled as it entered innumerable tunnels and crossed bridges over narrow gorges, passing rivers and streams with impossible names. Year in, year out, Torrente Puzzofeto had us all in fits of laughter. Puzzofeto, and we knew that our journey was nearing its end. It was a long, tiring journey, which saw us changing trains and direction so as to cut across the mountain spine of Italy and cross over to the Ionian coast. By the time we had reached the end of the long curve on the eastern Calabria coast, the sun was setting like a ball of fire behind the mountains of the Sila. By now it was getting dark, and the first stars appeared in the sky. With every hiss and puff of the old engine, our hearts beat faster, and her eyes grew moist when we heard the station master's voice shout out loud and clear, "Metaponto!" My father would start busying himself, pulling cases and bags down from their compartments, and she would wipe our coal-blackened faces and brush our hair, for her bambine had to look as best they could when they alighted at the train station into the loving arms awaiting. Soon we could see the city lights on the horizon, getting closer and closer with the rhythm of the train along the endless railroad. As the rhythmic movement slowed down, the carriages entered the station with a hiss, and we leaned out eagerly from the window. suddenly she saw them. She was always the first one of us to do so. The small group of her loved ones. Her papa's white-haired head standing taller than the rest. And suddenly, without restraint, at the top of her voice, louder than the screeching train engine's brake, louder than the capostazione's whistle, louder than the puffing clouds of rising smoke, "Papa, mamma, Momino!" Momino was her beloved younger brother, for whom she had a motherly affection, replaced only when her bimba con un dentino was born on the Ides of March of 1947. In a confusion of suitcases being lowered from the train windows, amongst names called out loud and tears of joy, we fell into their arms, and our summer holiday began. This was our arrival, emotional, loving, so immensely touching that the feeling lives on more than half a century later, as though it were yesterday. From then on, it was going to be a whole month of sweet lulling in the arms of love. Never ever again have I felt so surrounded by a love that is tangible, a love that was made of touching and hugging and kissing and talking and singing. Every moment of the day and of the night. Yet, all this began, on the morrow of our arrival, with a horrid drink of Magnesia San Pellegrino. I shall never forget the torture of drinking that mixture, the powder for which came out of a little oval metal box. Printed on its lid was the image of a friar, somewhat like Lizio Faustine of Christmas time. I shall not describe the effect of that early morning drink, but the rest of the day had to be spent at home because of its obnoxious effect. Staying home, in that home, at Via Cavour 52, was the start of an adventure. My little sister Daniela and I chased each other through the endless rooms, followed by Lola the old dog and Eulalia, Tio Momino's cat. The favorite of all the rooms was the last, La Stanza in Fondo in Fondo. In early days, when he still was a medical student, this was our uncle's study room. But as time went by and he was away doing his military service, this became my family's bedroom. Its high domed ceiling bore hidden cupboards which excited our curiosity to no end. And the enormous 800 cupboards were big enough for us to hide in, amongst old, musty clothes of family members long gone by, with their loves, their hates, and untold, forbidden passions. A more recent cupboard with fancy glass doors that seemed to hold secrets too big and beyond our comprehension. It held our uncle's medical books, some human bones, which were useful for his studies. But the most secret item was the broken marble bust of a bald man with a square protruding jaw. For some strange reason, the cupboard hid a door, which I later found out led to the landing in the stairs opposite the main entrance to the apartment. The double bed in this stanza in fondo had an old metal headboard with a mother-of-pearl design of garlands and plump little angels. Contrasting, and just above it, hang a dramatic ivory crucifix framed in dark wood against a purple velvet panel. Generations of Bianculli's and Mastronuzzi's had been conceived, were born, and had gone to eternal rest on this big bed beneath the dancing angels and under the sinister crucifix. In the center of the room, from the high domed ceiling, hung a globe, fascinating and modern compared to the rest of the furnishings. It must have dated from the 20s, when Peppino and Tecla, my grandparents, had got married. The 50s saw its end, when I, their precious prima nipotina, stood on the bed, imitating General de Gaulle, before my sister and younger cousins. Lifting my arm with hand up high, I shouted, "Vive l'Orgerie Française!" punching the globe, which burst into smithereens, attracting the wrath of three generations of family females who came running from the kitchen, across Nonnangelina's bedroom, through the dining room, past Annalena's bedroom, into Nonni's bedroom, across the sitting room, through Nonno's surgery, and finally bursting into the stanza in fondo, to find comic me acting the part, and all the younger kids covered in glass and profusely shedding tears of laughter. In the old family home in Via Cavour, every room had its fascination. And most exciting of all was the fact that they were not divided by any form of corridor, but they just followed one into the other in sequence, so that one had to go through all the rooms before getting to the two extremes, the stanza in fondo's tiny washroom, and on the opposite end, almost to close the circle, the pantry attached to the kitchen. Ma voi voli da cucina, a me quella che mi consola è la dolla maiola, perché quel che mi tira su son che zita con il ragù. La fortuna è fugace. Nonna's kitchen in Via Cavour 52, with its aphrodisiac smells, was the fount of all bounty for the family members and their entourage. People came and went, bringing demijohns of wine and oil and baskets of live eels, bunches of mussels, trays of fresh fish, boxes laden with grapes, figs and peaches, kilos and kilos of San Marzano tomatoes. The kitchen was the workshop for endless quantities of new marelli, gnocchetti, cozze in tortiera, spaghetti al sugo di pomodoro, pizze, calzoni, focacce, mozzarella in carrozza, scamorze e scamorzine.
La mattina se leggo il giornale, corro il rischio che dopo sto male. C'è la borsa che cade, una tassa che scade, c'è l'alga mortale, la nube fatale. Tutto il mondo si è inquinato, ma lo zoo che paga, mi dimetto da terrestre,
In that kitchen were produced thousands of bottles of freshly made tomato sauce, endless rows of jars stacked with home-prepared salt anchovies, pots and pots of preserved olives, strings of dried figs and jars of almonds, melanzane sott'olio and pepperoni sott'aceto. Besides, in this kitchen, over the courtyard in Via Amfiteatro, pots of deliciously smelling coffee were continuously produced and served in little cups and saucers laid on little metal trays. But even more importantly, the kitchen was the women's meeting place, the alcove, where secrets were murmured and love pains revealed, where hand-embroidered dowries were bought and sold, and endless piles of medical leaflets burnt under the enormous brass cauldron, where dozens of spotless sheets were boiled before being hung out to flutter and dry under the fierce southern sun. This intriguing, busy kitchen was Nonna Tekla's kingdom. Here she reigned as a queen. She was a homely queen, but nonetheless a queen. All the other women in the family circle came after her on the social scale, just because she was the wife of the padrone di casa. Her mother, Nonna Angelina, her aunt, Zia Titina, the maid, Antonietta, and Rosa, the ever-present neighbour, come errand runner, come nurse, come assistant maid-servant, were only secondary figures. All the many women who came from time to time added colour and meaning to that kitchen, which was the heart, the pulse of this big, incredible home.
Penso che un sogno così non ritorni mai più. Mi dipingevo le mani e la faccia di blu. Poi d'improvviso venivo dal vento rapito e incominciavo a volare nel cielo infinito. Volare.
Amongst the many females gravitating around the home were Cousin Mimina, who came to dinner at midnight, Zia Amalia, the busybody who, in her heyday, had been a hard-working gerarca fascista, and Zia Lina, her white-skinned sister. These two, as sisters of the padrone di casa, were also partly owners of the apartment block, and so they enjoyed a position of privilege. Much respect was due to them. And they knew it. But there were others. Comara Pishosha, so-called because of her disproportionately protruding jaw, and Comara Maria, who came from a village nearby to bring oil and cheese. She climbed the servants' entrance stairs from Via Amfiteatro, carrying a basket of her delicious wares on her head. There were the women who lived downstairs, below the piano nobile. They vied daily with Antonietta for the use of the flowing tap water. "No picca d'acqua," they would shout. And I remember the pipes were old and the pressure was low, but the water that came out was very cold and pleasant to drink. In days before the refrigerator, it used to be left to run into the washhand basin over the watermelon so that this would reach the master's table cool and refreshing, for the joy of all at table, and to the despair of the other inhabitants of the building who had to wait their turn to get the fresh water flowing out of their water taps.
Cantare. Oh, oh, oh. Nel... degli gli occhi tuoi blu, felice di stare qua.
My nonno Peppino, the master of the house, came home with an enormous red melon twice or thrice a week. He would purchase it at the market in the old part of town where he held his outpatients clinical sessions. His patients were mainly the fishermen and the street vendors of the Mercato in Taranto Vecchia. Often he was repaid in kind for his medical services. This meant abundant fresh fruit, but mostly a variety of fresh fish and big prehistoric bunches of mussels from the Giardini delle Cozze. Nonno Peppino would come home from his morning visits, walking up the stairs at a slow rhythm, followed by one of Rosa's many sons carrying the much-awaited anguria, the red melon, which was cooled down under the cold running water while the family at table enjoyed their spaghetti or gnocchetti or cappelletti al pomodoro or the typical pasta dish from Puglia, orecchiette e cime di rape. We were told that beneath the family building, still visible in the basement into which we never set foot, were the remains of a Greek amphitheatre, the remnants of the sovereign city which ruled over the Magna Graecia of southern Italy, the city of Taras. Many and varied were the voices that reached our windows from the narrow yard in Via Amfiteatro. They were not the chants of Leonidas, or Lysis of Tarentum, nor of Livius Andronicus, the poet, or Pacuvius, greatest of tragic poets of ancient Rome. They were simply the many people who gravitated around our grand home. The postman shouting, Mastro Nuzzi! And pretty Agatina singing love songs whilst washing the dishes. They were the cobbler's wife from across the road in Via Cavour, deep in conversation with the village woman who periodically came over to sell embroidered linen for the girls preparing to be brides. Soon I was to be amongst these, and I still treasure some of those works of art which formed part of my trousseau. Dreamlike, hand-embroidered sheets and tablecloths purchased after long negotiations for her first granddaughter by my grandmother in her kingdom, the kitchen.
Nel blu, dipinto di blu, felice di stare lassù, ma tutti I sogni nell'alba.
Coming from our four-roomed home in Malta, where we lived alone with our mother, Dad only appeared after long working hours at our bedtime, we found there existed a universe of people who lived in symbioses, and we were part of this tribe. In fact, for that 1 month a year, we were at the center of it all. And we loved it. Oh yes, we loved being spoilt and pampered. We were put on show. These are our granddaughters from Malta. Parlano l'italiano, l'inglese ed il maltese. And we were taken along to visit family friends where, every time, we were to say something in English and something in Maltese. We particularly loved visiting the De Donato family at their summer residence by the seaside in San Vito, because there were many children, boys and girls, of our age, with whom we could play, swim, dance.
Mentre il mondo pian piano scompare negli occhi tuoi blu, la tua voce è una musica dolce che suona per me.
The De Donatos had been family friends since wartime, when both the Mastro Nuzzi and De Donato families were evacuated away from Taranto because of the dangerous proximity to the harbour. They had shared hard times in the rural village of Martina Franca. Anna and Amelia, two town girls, found life in the village uninteresting and restricted. But with time, the remembrance bound them in a long-lasting friendship. Now that the war was forgotten, the family had its summer house far out on the peninsula close to the San Vito lighthouse, which had been well known to British airmen on their reconnaissance planes before the bombing of the Italian Navy in the Mar Piccolo of Taranto. But the war seemed a matter gone by ages before. We were the children of the survivors of the war, and life was beautiful.
Volare, oh, cantare, oh, nel blu dipinto di blu, felice di stare lassù.
The De Donato children lent us their bicycles. I remember not wanting to admit I could not ride a bike, and ending up riding waist-high in a cornfield, keeping my balance but unable to regain the road and catch up with the others, who laughed while I blushed, hating them, I promised myself, forever.
Volare, oh, cantare.
Of course, the bicycle ride in the cornfield ended with a fall and, once more, with a tear on my homemade Bobby Socker's knee-length jeans.
Quando tramonta la luna li porta con sé.
Ma io continuo a sognare negli occhi tuoi belli, che sono blu come un cielo trapunto di stelle. Volare, oh, cantare, oh.
With these memories of childhood pranks, happy childhood memories, when one unsteadily rode a bicycle along that limbo that separates childhood from adolescence, I see that time is up once more, so please join me again next week if you wish to listen to some more episodes of Pizza and Toffee Apples in the 1950s.
La tua voce è una musica dolce che suona per me. Volare, cantare, oh, 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 nel blu degli occhi tuoi blu, felice di stare qua giù, nel blu degli occhi tuoi blu, felice di stare qua giù.